Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Roost Podcast. As always, I am Carter Spires, your co-host Matthew Bartlett, the owner and managing editor of The Roost, your premier source for Rice sports news and analysis. Well, we get to talk about a win 2 weeks in a row, which is a very welcome change up from the first, 12 weeks of the season?
So I've blocked the rest out of my memory. All I remember is two wins in a row. That's when the season started, right? 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. It's wild how they moved the start of college football back to mid-November, but here we are.
Convenient. Loosey-goosey math.
Yeah, so we'll break down that win against North Texas. Another great defensive performance. Another weirdly parallel to the win against Middle Tennessee. But we'll do that, and then we'll preview the final game of the year in way out in El Paso against UTEP. And but before that, we'll get into some housekeeping stuff and some Rice and some other Rice sports and conference news as usual. So,
yeah, we were busy last week. I think at the same time as football going on at home, we had women's basketball playing at Oklahoma State. We had the men playing in the Bahamas, and we had volleyball playing at Tudor, all at like 2 o'clock, 2:30 on Saturday. So I guess some housekeeping things first before we jump into that. If you were following The Roost on Twitter, thanks, Grace. We appreciate you. Please do that. Tell your friends. But what also, you know, The Roost Pod, we have a separate Twitter account just for this podcast. Whereas The Roost account will tweet all sorts of news and information and commentary and whatever I think is most notable at the time. The Roost Pod, we don't tweet a lot. We just kind of put out important notes that are relevant to the podcast. So if you want, you can go ahead to Twitter and actually turn on notifications, and you can get notified every time we tweet from The Roost Pod, which we're tweeting when episodes are dropping. So we promise not to spam you or tweet too much, but you will get the first. So if you have a delay on your podcast provider of choice, you will always know when the next episode drops. Especially, we'll have this one up so in time for y'all to hit the road and travel and eat your turkey, so you won't know this until you listen to it. Paradox. But next time, turn it on, and you'll be the first to know. And then also, along with Thanksgiving and stuff, we'll have some Black Friday sales, of course, and stuff going on at the Roost shop. So stay tuned. We'll put those up on the website and whatnot. Go get yourself some gear, support the Roost, and all we're doing with Rice Athletics. And getting back to that busy weekend at Rice. So the women's basketball team had kind of a rough day. They were, I guess, briefly leading Oklahoma State on the road, and then a switch got flipped. And then, as soon as the Rice football offense started scoring, the women's basketball team stopped, and they got blown out pretty handily. But good news is they played their third road game of this season against Oklahoma State on Wednesday, day before Thanksgiving, and fell behind and then outscored the Cowgirls of McNeese State by, I think, 40 points over the last 30 minutes. So
that'll get it done.
That was nice to see. I will take outscoring anyone by 40 over any stretch of time, which includes football.
Right. and the good news for them is they've got a stretch against, they've got Texas Southern and Prairie. They're doing their tour of the small Texas schools and the local HBCUs for the next three or
and
four
Northern
games.
Arizona is up next this weekend, I believe. So the mighty powerhouse of Northern Arizona.
Yeah. They have a really good mascot, don't they? Are they the Lumberjack? I know Stephen F. Austin, who is notable right now, is the Lumberjacks, but doesn't, I swear. Northern Arizona is also the Lumberjacks. But yeah, they have those games, and then they have they play in one of those invitational tournaments in Puerto Rico, and I'm not sure how the scheduling works for that one, but they have a couple games against, I believe it's Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech. Mm-hmm. I don't think either of them are ranked right now, but I checked, and I think they're both undefeated. So, you know, having two more opportunities against power conference teams before they start up conference play in CUSA should be good.
Those wins, if we can get them, would be huge, especially dropping our first two to Oklahoma State and Texas A&M. So that would be good. And then, but on the winning front, the men went to the Bahamas and they won 2 out of 3, ended up in third place out of 8 teams. So lost to Liberty on Saturday, came back on on Sunday and beat ECU, and that was with Trey Murphy, who got, I don't know exactly what it was, some sort of lower body leg injury against Houston, came back in, finished the game, but was out for this weekend stretch, at least the first couple of games. So being able to win 2 of 3 with arguably your best or one of your 2 or 3 best shooters and a very good defender, that was good to see.
Yeah, and even that loss to, you know, Liberty hasn't exactly been a murderer's row thus far, but they are 8-0 in the middle of the best start in school history. So no particular shame in that loss. But
I did not know that. I knew there were top 100 RPI, only top 100 RPI team in that tournament. So, but not too shabby.
Yeah, I think 6-3. You know, we talked about this last time, but you know, after going 2-1 over the weekend, 6-3 at this point through the season is certainly better than I had expected.
Hey, it's a winning record,
right? Yeah, no, and it puts them on a really good pace thus far through the season, and they've got some more winnable ones coming up before they hit conference play. So, and you know, I went and checked their KenPom rating, who is, you know, Ken Pomeroy, sort of the father of popular college basketball analytics, and he has a big, you know, he does rankings of all 350 D1 teams, and I think last year Rice ended up around 240 in that ranking, and this year thus far they're up to like 160, which puts them in the top half of D1, which is, you know, considering where they've been through a lot of the recent seasons, that's a pretty good place to be in for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you can just play level through the rest of the season and not even, we would take overachieving, certainly, but if you can just hang around and play at the same level that you've been, then you're looking at probably one of the more successful seasons that Rice has had in a good long while. So, like what Scott Perez is put together right now, and fun surprise that when they got back from the Bahamas, they had their locker room redone. I don't know if you've seen the video or anything on Twitter. Yeah. You should go check it out. It looks pretty nice.
And also one final bit on if you want to, it is a little sad in some sense, but if you want to sort of live vicariously through some former Owls, former Rice coach Mike Rose and his VCU Rams, led by former Rice Owl Marcus Evans, are 5-0 and ranked in the top 20 in both polls with a win against a ranked LSU squad. Or sorry, they're 6-0 with a win against a ranked LSU squad. So lament what might have been, but I think we can feel pretty good for those guys. So that'll be a fun, you know, if you're looking for a secondary rooting interest, I don't think we have too much in the way of hard feelings with those guys. So considering the season they led Rice to in the one season they were both here. So yeah, if you want a second team, you can kind of live vicariously through, follow those guys.
There you go. And then one last note, switching away from basketball, volleyball. Another heartbreaker.
Yeah.
They ran through the tournament and got to the championship game where they played Western Kentucky. And the fourth set, they were down 2-1. We're actually trailing 24-20, I believe, at the time. And ended up rallying back against, what is that, 4 match points to take the lead. And close out the fourth set, and then lost another close one on the fifth set, down to the wire again. And Rice has now won 2 games in every single match that they've lost this year. It's been razor close every time they've lost. So, the tutor was rocking, and the atmosphere there was phenomenal. And now, unfortunately, Western Kentucky gets the auto bid to the NCAA tournament. Rice is kind of in the wait and see mode. You'd like to think that because they are a ranked team, they will still be getting in. And I don't think that's really much of a concern. The question will be where they are playing and what seed they will be. So if you are around the Patterson Center or campus this weekend, 7:15 on Sunday, they're having a watch party. Everyone is welcome to come see and hopefully see a celebratory bunch of girls and find out where they're going. So a good regular season so far and more to come from them. So that'll be exciting.
Absolutely. Looking forward to that. And yeah, I guess the other note we have before we get to the Rice game is a little bit of a scandal is maybe not the right word, but
this is how things get blown out of proportion.
An interesting circumstance arising in CUSA
over debating the blown out of proportion.
Yeah.
Well, so it's interesting. So the Conference USA, like every other conference in college athletics, has an email list where they send out announcements and important notes to the media and just kind of updating people on results of games and what's going on in the conference and players of the week and what have you, whatnot. So on, I think it was on Monday, there's a very formulaic email that gets sent out. With this being the last weekend of the regular season and football coming up, Conference USA was kind enough to email out to the media and may post on their website a statement regarding to the tiebreaker rules for the divisions, should there end up needing it. Right now, we have a three-way tie in the West and the potential for a two-way tie in the East. And so those tiebreaker rules may or may not be needed this weekend. So I saw that email and I read through, and of course, as it had to happen, the tiebreaker rules in the West that we were emailed on earlier in the week, the tiebreaker was whoever has had the longest drought appearing in the championship game gets to go. So that was, I think, the seventh tiebreaker, which I was okay. That was interesting to me. Not yeah, quite a coin, but
yeah, I've heard some weird ones before when you get down into those seventh and eighth tiebreakers, but that's a new one.
So anyhow, I laughed at that one. I put it up on Twitter and I said, this is kind of ridiculous that what happened under a different coach in your program's history 10 years ago impacts on what your team this season does or doesn't get to go to the championship game. Apparently, the athletic directors in the conference also thought it was a bit silly, because later that day, they, lo and behold, you go back on the website and the tiebreakers have changed. So no longer did it say the team with the longest championship drought gets to go. It had a breakdown of the seventh tiebreaker is now the College Football Playoff rankings, which won't come to play because no Conference USA teams are going to be close to getting to that top 25. And then the next one was the computer rankings, which is a composite, kind of the same stuff they used for the BCS with a handful of different computer rankings all pulled together into a number, which ends up deciding, all right, who has the highest number, you get to go in. So, but there was no communication to anyone that any changes had been made. It was just there. And so lo and behold, like, I go back and check and I'm trying to ask around. I'm like, did I read things wrong? But then I go back and look at my old tweet. No, they changed the tiebreaker rules the final week of the regular season prior to the last set of conference games, all of which kick off this weekend. And Southern Miss, which by default of having the longest championship drought was in the driver's seat should there be a tie this weekend, now they are behind in the computer rankings. And if everyone ends up tied, it's looking like UAB will now win the tiebreaker instead of Southern Miss. Which,
well, let's hope it doesn't end up tied that way, because they are going to be mad in Hattiesburg.
I think the conference office is praying. And that's the and so as much as I've been able to kind of work back channels and talk to people, I did confirm that this was not a decision made by the commissioner, Jeannie McLeod. It was collectively done by the athletic directors. They came together and agreed that the old rules needed to change and decided to go ahead and change them now. So my biggest issue is the rule was a bit weird and I didn't like it. And had that been the tiebreaker, like, the conference office would have gotten roasted on it, and lo and behold, it probably would have been changed in the offseason. But there's a potential now to make a rule change. Like, everyone played recess. Like, pickup basketball or what do you call it, wall ball or something like that. Like, you don't get to change the rules in the middle of the game. So I don't know whether or not for sure the Southern Miss AD was on board with this or not. I have reason to believe that he might have at least consented, but just totally bizarre and not something that from a national spotlight for a conference that, you know, wants to paint themselves with the rest of D1 football and belonging is, I don't think is a particularly good look, and kind of disappointed in the conference for we're recording now on Wednesday and it's been 2 days and they still haven't acknowledged that they've changed anything in any sort of statement.
Yeah. And with that caveat that this could, by the time you're listening to this, they could have released a statement and this could all be moot. But like, you know, like you said, it's one thing to be like, oh, that's a bad rule and we need to change it. It's like, well, you're in the very late in the season. You probably ought to just ride it through. If you're going to just say, you know, no, this rule is too bad, we couldn't, you know, justify allowing this rule to actually come into play, even in the middle of the season, say that then. Like, you know, how hard is it to just, you know, draft a statement and say, you know, this hadn't come up in a while. It's sort of, I don't know, maybe you don't want to admit that you sort of forgot what the tiebreaker rules were, but like, you know, just say that this scenario was about to come up and the athletic directors of the conference collectively felt, which by all accounts, it seems like that was what happened, that they looked at it and there was at least broad agreement, if maybe not unanimous agreement, that this needed to be changed. They just come out and say, you know, this was a bad rule and we needed to change it as quickly as possible. Don't just change it and not say anything about it.
It's lose-lose. Yeah, I mean, you don't change it and you get killed for having a really bad rule on your books that has no impact on the current teams deciding who gets to go, and then you do change it and you get a bad look for changing a rule in the middle of the season. But right now it's the perception coming off from the conference is that it's just kind of pulling strings in the background and making up things as you go and deciding. I mean, it's not like, you know, it'd be one thing if, you know, we're sitting here with three teams that are, you know, are undefeated in conference and we need positioning to try and get the right team into the championship game so that they can get a crack at a New Year's Six Bowl. It's like there's no upside at all to be gained from whatever team other than the prospective fan base. And right. Like, I haven't looked at any of these coaches' contracts, but most coaches' contracts have incentives where if you make a championship game, you get, you know, $50,000, $100,000, $200,000. You win a conference title, you get $200,000, something like that. So, like, not that I'm not saying that coaches' salaries are a reason to make rules or not make rules, but, like, this could be financially impacting people and programs on, not on a whim, but we've probably spent enough time on this, but either way, I was pretty disappointed to see that happen and still waiting. We will see if this rule ends up becoming utilized. So the way that they used to had done it in the past when these rankings were used in the BCS days, the computers don't have everything tabulated and published until Sunday morning afternoon. So it could be possible all of these games kick off with the teams in the West and the tiebreaker either at, I think, 2 to 2:30, 3 o'clock, all in that range. It kind of feels like the European soccer, the final round where they put them all at the same game, so you don't know who needs what to win. And very much so like that. So could be fun on Saturday, but the official ratings, if that's what they're waiting for, might not be out till Sunday. So we might have this awkward 24-hour period from Saturday afternoon to Sunday afternoon where no one's saying anything, and fans and schools are waiting to see if they are going to a championship game. So that could be bad. So for the conference's sake, they will hope that doesn't happen, but there is at least a chance.
Yep. Well, the good news, if you're listening to this podcast, is that you're probably a Rice fan and this doesn't hurt us. So,
this is true.
In that vein, we'll move on. And, another nice win, for Rice, picking up their first home win of the year against North Texas, a team that, was the preseason favorite to win the conference, and now, thanks to your Owls, is going to miss a bowl game. So things change quickly in this conference.
I like Tom Stewart after the win. We asked him the post-game press conference. We said, you know, the last two teams that you've beaten now, you've handed them their seventh loss, knocking them out of bowl eligibility. I realize you would like to go to a bowl, but if you can't, is there any satisfaction in knocking them out? And he said, well, if we don't get to go to a bowl, why should they? And I was like, fair point. So Rice was aware.
I love open pettiness. I'm always appreciative of when that when coaches and players allow themselves to let that come out a little bit. So that's a fun quote.
It was neat, and it was so, of course, playing most of his college football up north in the Ivies at Harvard. This was his first college football game, college football win in the state of Texas. So pretty neat for Tom Stewart on senior day to close that one out. And then this was the 11th out of the last 12 senior days that Rice has won on, which not too shabby considering you have a couple, you know, 1 and 2 win seasons thrown in there that somehow you find a way to win your last game. So if we can convince Rice that every game is their last home game, we're golden. And it's just that easy, right?
let's get on that, athletic department. Come on, we got to control the flow of information here.
And then one other note on this. This is snapped a 15-game losing streak against Western Division opponents. So this is the first West Division win Rice has had. What does that go back to? I guess 2016. Yeah, I think 2017.
Yeah. They beat UTEP that season.
Yeah. So not bad. Nice to get several monkeys off the back and a 2-game winning streak.
Yeah. Pretty nice to say. It's funny how all of these narratives can turn so quickly. Because we've been talking all season about how, you know, the team had shown real improvement, but the schedule was so hard. And if they could swap schedules with last year's team, you know, we'd be talking about how much they've improved and stuff. Well, it's looking like we'll kind of get to spin that narrative that way anyway, because, you know, we'll talk about UTEP in a second, but Rice is favored by about a touchdown, I think, which seems about right to me. And, you know, if they do what they're supposed to do next week, they'll get to end out this season on a 3-game winning streak, which it's... You know, 3-9 is not the record you want, but it's better than 2-11, and it's certainly better than what you felt like you were staring down after going 0-9 to start the season. So it's really good to build this. You know, even if they happen to drop next weekend against UTEP, you know, that would be a disappointment. But just the sort of good feelings and the sense of relief that that winning these two games, especially right in a row, has been able to kind of to change the narrative and change the, you know, the attention and feeling around the program is a really nice thing going forward.
Yeah, and it's been interesting on our side. I know we felt that because we live at least in audio form on narratives and storylines and what's going on the broader scale. The team, as every team does, will preach, you know, we're not listening to the outside. We're doing what, listening to our coaches and, you know, executing and following the process. And I think this team has been pretty good at that through all the ups and downs. Brad Rosner this week, you know, talking about the two wins and, you know, the recent string of success. He said, well, we haven't done anything yet. We've won two games. And that was not meant to be dismissive of the accomplishments of those wins, which have been pretty impactful for the program. But it was kind of a reflection of the mindset in the locker room right now that, like, yeah, they're really happy that they won two games, but that's not their expectation. So I think especially the importance of this coming game, this third win, and, you know, last year beat Old Dominion to end the year and kind of rode that wave. Now it's could have the possibility of a 3-game winning streak, fulfilling the challenge by Rex Ryan after the bye week a couple weekends ago. And I think, you know, like you said, the momentum and the storyline, yes, but this team setting itself up to go into the beginning of next season with a starting game against Houston. And, you know, if Rice beats UTEP, Houston gets Navy this weekend, and Navy's really good, and Houston is not having the kind of season that they were expecting. There's a real chance that Houston and Rice finish with the same number of FBS wins this season. Is that insane?
Oh, that would be deeply satisfying. Deeply satisfying.
You still got to beat them on the field next year, so. But that gives us a whole offseason to talk smack. We've had Sam and Dustin, the guys from Seth and Holman podcast, who cover Houston on at least once or twice already onto the show. So I have no doubt we'll have things to talk about with them in the next coming weeks. But first things first is taking care of UTEP. And I guess all asides, back to North Texas. On, you want to handle the offense or the defense for Rice first? What sticks out to you?
We'll get started with the offense. Like I said in the intro, it was kind of the exact same situation, just sort of writ smaller, as the whenever MTSU, they got started out hot, forced some turnovers, cashed in on some early drives, and got up to a 20. You know, they didn't score as many points, but the biggest lead they had in the first half against MTSU was 17, and by the end of the first half in this one, they were leading 20-0, which was pretty awesome. And then after halftime,
their last score came with, I think, 8 minutes left in the third quarter, so they put up 20 points in roughly 20 minutes.
Yeah. After halftime, Rice's drives, punt, 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 fumble, end of game. Now, that last drive was great. Really, really fantastic drive, because, I mean, you get the ball back, you know, you've just had this huge defensive stop, which is fantastic, but you're still only up 6 points. UNT had two timeouts left, and there were 4 minutes left on the clock. Like, it was far from over at that point. They had another situation kind of like the previous game, where they got in kind of a third and long right away and managed to convert a huge play. This time it was another jump ball from Stewart to Rosner. They got them all the way out 35 yards for a first down, but they still had to get another first down from there, which Nashawn Ellerbe converted with a nice a run on third and six. But that's a huge drive to put together when you know, things have not gone your way on offense in the second half, and to be able to run out a full 4 minutes of clock when, you know, the other team still has two timeouts left, by getting those conversions, making those. You know, they weren't consistent in the second half, but being able to make those two plays, but that whole drive, especially when they needed to, was really, really impressive.
Yeah, and the thing is that we've been here before. Like the Louisiana Tech game, Rice punted it back to Louisiana Tech and gave them the ball with enough time. I think it was like a minute and change left on the clock for them to go drive down the field, kick the field goal that got them to overtime. Rice couldn't hold on to the football. And then we saw the same thing against UTSA, where Rice drove, ended up settling for a field goal and not running more clock and getting in the end zone. And UTSA goes down and scores a touchdown and wins the game. But the last 2 weeks, it came close. Middle did get an opportunity, but without much, no timeouts and 20 seconds on the clock. And then this time they actually got to go to victory formation and end the game on their terms. Like we've seen the progression to, they made the plays when it counted. And they, I mean, this is the epitome of the intellectual brutality, you know, Mike Bloomgren-esque offense, right? It's supposed to be able to control the clock, and you're supposed to be able to say, there's 4 minutes left, we're not giving the ball back. And this weekend, they did it.
Yeah, and And really that ability in general is to hold on to the ball and kind of play keep away when they needed to. That's really what won them the game on the whole. You know, they had 328 total yards and like 4.6 yards per play, which is not a whole lot better than North Texas's 4.2 yards a play. The difference was that Rice ran 71 plays and North Texas ran 57. And Rice held the ball for 38 minutes.
38?
Yeah. And time of possession can be a very misleading stat. But when you're a team that's built like Rice is, that has an offense like this, that this is what you want to do, or this is what you're aiming for, that's a good stat for them. That is what they want to be. Like, you'd like to see them be more efficient on a per-play basis and turn those, you know, 71 plays into 400 and 450 total yards instead of 330. But, you know, when you're able to keep the ball that long and capitalize on the opportunities you have, which they at least did in the first half, if not the second, and turn those into points, and then you play stingy defense and don't let the other team get drives on the other side of the ball. Well, in this conference, you can win games like that.
Here's something else that I think is particularly interesting on that time of possession. You mentioned it can be kind of a fickle stat. Well, here's the first half, the time of possession that Rice had in the first half. They had the ball for 22 minutes and change. North Texas didn't get a first down till their second to last drive in the second quarter. Rice controlled the clock. North Texas didn't move the ball, threw a lot of incomplete passes, interceptions, fumbles, and then the second half, it went back to balanced. I mean, Rice had the ball for a little over 15 minutes in the second half out of 30, and only a little bit over 6 minutes in the fourth quarter. So what was most impressive was the script worked, right, in the first half, and they were able to control the ball and hang out of the clock and do whatever they wanted to do on offense. And then the second half, the offense really wasn't on the field very much at all comparatively, and their 4 minutes at the end of the game was basically their entire fourth quarter when they had a shot. They had one other drive of meaningful time, and they finished it.
So that's like, I think it shows something when you have a time of possession disparity that is created by your defense playing well. Because, you know, it's one thing to have the whole ball a whole bunch and you can, I don't know, have long drives that end in turnovers or miss field goals or something, and then, you know, the other team is scoring in one or two plays, and so you're not keeping the ball very long for that. But when you're building that advantage because your defense is forcing a three and out on almost every drive, as like was happening in the first half, that's meaningful. That's when the stat is actually illustrative. So it was just that whole first half was really on both. Where I was sensibly talking about the offense, but that whole first half on both sides of the ball was about as fine as a display as we've ever seen. Even if they didn't put up as many points as they did in the first half against MTSU, that on both sides of the ball, the first half in this game was about as dominant as they've been all season.
Yeah, and there was a couple wrinkles on that, some of the adversity they overcame in those moments that I thought was interesting. So last week, Rice, the football team, got hit with the flu bug. And so it was one of those things where in and out, you didn't know who was going to be at practice on any particular day. And who, worse enough, you didn't know who's going to be available or who was going to come down sick for the game. And after taking no reps with the first team or offense or the second team offense, he was actually working with the defense and scout team, Isaac Klarkowski, who is a walk-on freshman from Green Bay who turned down multiple wrestling scholarships in the Big Ten to come to Rice and literally be a rocket scientist.
And that is Green Bay, Wisconsin, by the way. I know there's a town named literally every town name under the sun in Texas, but this...
Oh,
is
there a Green Bay, Texas?
Oh, I have no idea. There probably is, just because there's everything, right?
But there's a Paris, so...
Yes, all the way from Wisconsin, walking on at Rice.
There's a Green Bay jail in Tarrant County, according to Google.
Close enough.
But that's all I got. Anyhow, so Green Bay, Wisconsin, Cheesehead coming down. Not only did he not know he was going to play, he hadn't snapped at all, not just for Rice, but in college, in any game. He hadn't played at all. And he was told on Friday, hey, there's a chance that you might play. We don't know how Shea's doing. And then Friday night before the game, he was told, yeah, you're going to be the guy. And so Rice, and most college football teams do this. I think like someone put out an article from The Athletic or somewhere earlier, 120-ish out of the 130 FBS teams stay in hotels the night before home games. Mm-hmm. And so this is pretty common. Just have everyone in one place, do your meetings, make sure no one's getting out to funny business. So Klarkowski and Brian Chafin, who is a grad guy who came from Stanford and ran Mike Bloomberg's system for 4 years at Stanford and now here. So he knows it. We joke it may be better than some of the coaching staff. So he's the guy, and they literally pulled the beds in their hotel room that they were sharing to the walls and got the playbook out and worked play by play every game that was on deck for Saturday. And he had a 45-minute session in a hotel room with mattresses pressed against the walls at making his calls and figuring out who he was supposed to block. And then they threw him to wolves. I mean, the North Texas defense is far from the most intimidating front seven that you're going to face in Conference USA, but we're talking about a guy who had never played a snap in college before and looked great, like to the point where we're up in the press box. They were wearing their gray, I wore them for military appreciation last year, but the gray uniforms with kind of like the shiny outlined mm-hmm. on the numbers. And so I couldn't even make out who was there.
Yeah, kind of hard to see the numbers. It was a little difficult when I was looking at the highlights this week.
But it wasn't a situation where like, oh my goodness, who's in at center? He doesn't know what he's doing. I couldn't even tell. Like,
did he have any bad snaps?
There were no snaps that went on the ground or over anybody's head. Like, I don't know if they were all perfect, but there was nothing egregious that I can recall.
Yeah, and like, and to do all that, like practicing on the scout team, that like, you know,
on
we've
the
hit this
defense side of the scout team.
Yeah, I mean, we've hit on this, I think, a little bit on the pod before, and I've talked about it some in the film room. But like, this is not a simple offense from a blocking perspective. Like, not at all. They do just about okay. If you have like a you know, kind of deeper than surface level understanding of like football X's and O's tactics, that sort of things, you probably know a couple basic types of run plays, like inside zone's a popular one, power and counter and these sorts of things. Rice does all those things. They run inside outside zone, they run power, counter, they run these toss plays that we've talked about, but they also run, you know, stuff like the ISO run that I highlighted in this week's film room. They run you know, like I talked about, this shotgun outside zone with a lead block. They do a lot of, way more different blocking schemes than most teams in college football run. And so to have a guy come in and to have not to play center.
Yeah, like not that any position on the line is easy, but the center is the one who, like, literally nothing starts without you. Like, you have to know exactly what's going on at all times.
As a true freshman walk-on that was on the scout team until Friday night, to come in and play center and make these snaps and run all these different blocking schemes that they run, that's insane.
Yeah, and so I went ahead, I put a short piece up on him and kind of the highlight on the site of the walk-on program at Rice, because, of course, we've already talked about a lot on the podcast this year, Treshawn DeVones, who's now one of the Owls' starting corners, he's a walk-on. And then Chris Barnes, there's actually a trophy for that honors the best walk-on in college football every year. Mm-hmm. So Hunter Renfrow won it last year. You've probably heard of him. Luke Falk won it the year before. This guy named Baker Mayfield won it twice. So these are the kind of guys that are winning this award. So Chris Barnes, the Rice punter and kicker, he didn't win, but he was nominated for that award, which is impressive in itself. And so those are just three guys that, I mean, Chris walked on as a tight end and is now our dual threat specialist. There is, I've spoken with Coach Bloomgren, and he understands as much as everybody that winning at Rice is not the same as winning at, you know, Alabama. Pick a blue blood of your choice. Like, you can roll out of bed at Alabama or Texas or LSU or Michigan, and all of the elite athletes in your state are probably going to say, can I please come play for you? Like, even if that were the case at Rice, half of them couldn't get in because of the academic limitations. So Rice is already up against the wall. And one of the areas that they've kind of identified is, you know, we think we can do this better than anybody else is their walk-on program. And you got three guys playing D1 football right now that are starting and winning football games. And you got, you know, a couple other guys on the team and in the pipeline. Like, pretty impressive. Rice is doing a lot of good things, but winning with their walk-ons and shoot their JUCO hit rate with guys like Brad Rosner and Naeem Smith and Blaze Aldridge. Like, you don't go, what is that? I'm trying to think of any other JUCO guys they have. 100%. Like, the hit rate on JUCO players is not that good, especially JUCO players that can get into Rice. So the development aspect of what Rice is doing right now is crazy. It definitely came to play in that win.
Yeah. I think it just speaks to what a good job this, you know, as quickly as the roster has turned over in the last 2 years, that they've managed to basically find effective guys from basically every possible avenue that you have for adding players, is really, really impressive and speaks to how well, you know, development, I think it's still, except for a couple of these guys, maybe, it's probably a little early to talk about development with this staff, because that's something that kind of happens over a long period of time. But it's very clear that from a talent identification perspective of getting, you know, searching everywhere and finding guys that can contribute right away, that this staff is top notch at that. That they do a really, really good job of identifying guys that fit their schemes and what they want to do, and getting them in and getting them ready to play right away. The situation that Klarkowski was in, it would have been you pass that test with flying colors if you're like not abjectly awful, and he was good.
Yeah, to the point where. Like, we talked about how big this win was. So this was the first win that Mike Bloomgren's ever had against a West opponent. And winning on senior day, matching last season's win total, have the opportunity to go to 3 next week and prove by numbers that his program is on the way up. Like, there was a lot of good things that happened this weekend. He came into the press conference, and the first player he mentioned by name was Isaac Klarkowski. That's how impressed he was. So, heck of a game by him. And then also running behind him, I wanted to shout out to Aston Walter. So he was one of those guys. He actually had to leave the game with he was suffering from the flu bug as well, and ended up having to get an IV and was just like couldn't return. He was too beat up. So he comes to the sideline and he says, "Coach, I don't think I can go anymore. I want to, but I just can't." And they say, "Well, you know, we were about to call that halfback pass." He's like, "No, I think I can go one more." So I kid you not, this happened.
Yeah.
So because of course he'd never thrown a pass in a college football game. So he runs back out there, and this is right after they convert that fourth down. And he goes back out there, throws the halfback pass that gets, I guess, Jordan Myers makes an incredible catch and ends up getting tackled on the 3 inches line. It was pretty close. Aston maintains it was a touchdown, but you know, it is what he was. He was really bummed that he doesn't have a passing touchdown on his resume. But anyhow, so that play happens. Coach looks up and is, you know, preparing to, where's Charlie, so he can put Charlie in the game and convert that play and run it in. And then he can't find Charlie. And that's because Aston is still on the field and has broken the huddle and, of course, dives over the plane into the end zone. So at the point where he literally didn't think he could go anymore, then nearly throws a touchdown pass, then jumps over the line and scores. And then he walks to the sideline and collapses and taps out and says, "All right, somebody else."
I appreciate that dedication.
The Walter brothers We've talked on this podcast so much about all of the young guys and the talent that the Blomgren has brought into this program. What some of the guys who have stuck around, like Austin and Aston and the seniors, Miles Adams, like their impact has been huge. And having guys like that with that kind of toughness and, want to get that touchdown pass in there before they call it a career. It was pretty cool, fun to watch and cool to see.
Passing game didn't put up big numbers, but
enough.
Yeah, they made the plays when they had to. Trammell, after a long time of ceding to Brad Rosner, again led the team in receptions and yards with 7 catches for 91 yards. Rosner had 5 catches for 70 yards, about half of which came, or exactly half of which came on that long reception, which I didn't break down in the film room this week because it was one because the camera angle on that play on the NFL Network broadcast was so zoomed in that you could see the quarterback and the guys in the box, and that was literally it. Like, you couldn't see the defense, you couldn't see Rosner lined up wide. So
the guy who got it.
Yeah. But it was kind of more of the same. And when I was talking about last week that, Tom hasn't really done anything special in terms of throwing the ball these last couple weeks, but he, there's something to be said for just being able to identify that mismatch. And all you've got to do is just throw a catchable ball when you get that situation where you've got a guy the size of Rosner and with his ability at the catch point, both in terms of his hands and using his body. You just got to put the ball where he can get it. And that's not something Rice has always had success doing this season. But that Tom has done it with Brad so consistently when they've been able to sort of produce that matchup that they want over the last couple of weeks. You don't have to make a hero play. You don't have to fire a laser through tight coverage or drop one in a bucket in the back of the end zone. If you just put your guy in a position to make a play, and he'll be able to make the play. So it's good to see that wasn't kind of a one-off thing from last week, and that they can continue to kind of pull that trick out of a hat when they need it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think this was one of Tom's like best performances. I thought he missed a couple of his shots he felt like he made all of them against Middle. So credit for that. You're not going to always do that. But he made the throw when it counted, and he was pretty sharp, especially on third down. He had a couple big completions that moved the sticks in the second half that, even though Rice wasn't scoring, they did make an impact on the game. And then we hit on a little bit. Here's a not fun stat in all of the midst of it, or I guess just an interesting stat. So when Rice takes the field against UTEP on Saturday, it will have been 35 days since they last scored a point after halftime, which is one. I'm playing with numbers a bit here. There was an off week,
yeah,
right, and then they've gone 3 games in a row without scoring after halftime, and then of course there's 7 days between a game. So it sounds like a bigger number than maybe it really is. But if Rice doesn't score after halftime against UTEP, then there's a real potential that they could go, when does next season start? In August? They could go 200 some odd days without scoring after halftime. Which we can laugh now because they're 2-1 and they haven't scored after half in a month. Like in the entire month of November, they didn't score after halftime, which is bizarre and something that, they would like to fix. And I think the UTEP defense will be a bit more forgiving in that front, but a weird stat and something that I think I'm not exactly sure what the answer is, but I'm hopeful that they'll be able to put a couple quirks into the playbook. We should have a couple guys maybe back this week and some more options, and hopefully everybody healthy, and that will give them some more tools at their disposal and be able to pull. So they brought in the that fly sweep to Zane Knipe, and Austin mm-hmm. Trammell had a carry, and a couple other things in there. So I think we'll see a little bit more things like that to kind of change things up that won't be just reserved for the first half, because I don't think Rice wants to I mean, if they can hang 40 on somebody and not score after half, I guess that's all right, but we'd like to see a bit more balance. But I guess a couple of defensive notes before we flip over.
Yeah, Blaze Aldridge picked up another TFL, putting him over, I believe it was Larry Izzo, for the all-time single-season Rice record. So congrats to him on that.
Not too shabby.
Yeah, pretty good. Antonio Montero picks up his first sack of the year. And good to see him. Good to see, you know, three sacks is nothing to write home about generally, but it's better than some performances they've had this season. So it's good to see them, you know, as inconsistent as the pass rush has been at times, it's good to see that get home a little bit.
And I even feel like this was one of the games where they did a pretty good job of getting after fine, but I feel like they've had other games where they made more of an impact on the passer without getting as many sacks.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that was just my perception, but it was nice. They added 7 tackles for a loss in there. Mm-hmm. Antonio Montero had 2.5 that all came in the fourth quarter, which stepping up in big moments. And then, I mean, the play and the plays by Treshawn Chamberlain, I mean, we're talking about we need somebody to come in and take over and slam the door. He did that on Saturday.
Yeah, a really impressive interception in the first half. A nice little design by Brian Smith on that interception. It was a play that we've seen, that I've broken down for you at least once this year in the film room, but that we've seen from Rice several times. It's that glance route RPO, that where you have a single receiver to one side, run a skinny post route, and all you do is read the safety that side, and if he stays back to play the pass, you hand it off. If he comes up to play the run, you throw that post. So George Nyquil, I believe, was the safety to that side, and he came up to play the run against an RPO look, and so Mason Fine looks at his receiver and says, "I've got that matchup," and pulls the ball to throw it. Well, Treshawn Chamberlain was the safety to the other side of the field, and I assume he was pretty close to the line, so I assume they figured he was either going to play in run support or maybe bail, and they were going to play cover 3 or something like that. But instead, they basically kind of left the deep. You know, it looked like they were playing cover 2 to the other side, but they basically left that deep half of the field unguarded, and Treshawn kind of played a robber role. It looked like they were expecting an RPO, and so Treshawn was playing kind of a robber coverage, which is where a safety will kind of sit toward in kind of the shallow middle of the field to rob, hence the name, any short crossing routes of the sort you typically see with an RPO. And so he sat in the middle, and you could actually see him bite on the run fake or on the run action from the RPO quickly. But then the moment he sees, you know, you can watch that GIF over and again. The moment he sees Fine pull the ball, he knows exactly what's happening. And so he just charges off to cut off the angle.
And it was a heck of a play.
Yeah. And
like
Fine,
the dive from that angle.
Yeah. Fine never saw him. So that was a really well-designed play, a really well-designed call for the defense, and a really, really great play for Chamberlain to actually get his hands on that pass and actually pick it off.
Yeah. And so Rice went down and score. They had already had a field goal on the board, went down and scored a touchdown. That took a 10-0 lead, and North Texas looked completely out of sorts. And then that probably would have been the defensive play of the game. He also had a tackle for a loss on the first series that forced the punt and helped get the offense, Rice, on the board to begin with. He was already having a heck of a game, and then setting the scene. So it's the fourth quarter. There's 4 minutes left on the clock. North Texas down by 6. Fourth down, Mason Fine throws into the end zone. And what I thought was a pretty good pass hits his receiver in the hands. And no sooner had the guy touched the football, but Treshawn Chamberlain comes out of the end zone and makes a hit that reverberates. I mean, I'm up in the press box, and I feel like I felt it. It was one of those hits. And you take a deep breath, and you see the receiver on the ground, the football on the opposite side of the end zone, and no flags, and the stadium's dead silent for like a half a second, and then everything goes crazy. It was maybe the play of the year by the defense.
Yeah. And easy if you were awarding a defensive MVP for this game, pretty easy to to give it to Trishon after that play. So
and they've been we had forgotten about this because they hadn't done it in a while, hadn't won a game, but they are handing out the old wrestling championship belts.
Yeah,
inside the stadium, so they do have a offensive and defensive and special teams and scout team player of the week or player of the game. I guess scout team player of the week, but offensive, defense, special teams player of the game when they win. So Trayshawn did get that belt and was officially recognized by the team as the defensive player of the game, and well deserved, because he gets it a little bit early and it's a penalty. And we saw last week give Middle Tennessee a free fourth down penalty in the end zone. Usually doesn't go well for you. And he's there late, and you know, North Texas kicks the extra point and they're winning 21-20. And we've seen the offense find success, and they did go and have success on the next drive, but I would prefer not to be in a situation where you have to go down the field and win the game when you are already winning.
Yeah, no, preferably not. Any last notes on North Texas before we move on?
I think that was it. Other than the Seth Luttrell has already made some promises this week that there would be a the words that you use, like a deep look and a potential overhaul of his program during the offseason. And Rice has put them in a very unhappy place where they don't want to be. And they will meet next year in Denton, and Mason Fine will not be there. Which is,
yeah, that's a relief.
That's I mean, zero. Can you imagine this? The coming to the preseason, they held the preseason, two-time preseason conference player of the year to zero touchdowns. And what it ended up being, like, yeah, 51-52% completions?
Yeah, 5.1 yards an attempt and a 17.6 QBR from ESPN. So,
amazing. Yeah.
Yep. You do that against, your defense does that against a player of that caliber, and things are going to turn out all right.
Yes, and no offense to Kyle Loxley moving over to UTEP. He is a pretty good maybe quarterback. He's not Mason Fine.
So moving on to UTEP, been kind of another tough year for them. They have one win. It was their season opener against our dear friends Houston Baptist, which they won 36, which it had never occurred to me just until just now how odd it is that Houston Baptist University has the Huskies for their mascot. Like, you know, not exactly.
Is it any more or less weird than the Lumberjacks? Taking it back to the beginning of the podcast? I don't know.
Yeah. Fair enough. But yeah, since then.
UTEP did have to rally from behind in the fourth quarter to win that game.
Houston Baptist. They are 0-7 in the conference, have not beaten an FBS opponent this year. In fact, props to New Mexico State, who, like Rice, was 0-9 through the first 12 weeks of the season. Like Rice picked up their first win 2 weeks ago, and then picked up their second win by beating UTEP last week, 44-35. So good for them, but not so great for UTEP. So they're 1-10 and have not allowed less than 26 points in any game this season, which is
a good cure for a struggling offense, which yeah. Rice was and might not be at least in a half so far.
Yeah, so hopefully Rice will be able to score some points in the second half of this one and not have to get on that 200-day streak of not scoring in the second half, like you mentioned.
Someone from the staff's going to get on to me about that if they don't score. They need to go put a field goal on the board.
Yeah. Their offense has not been terrible this season.
I think they've been more aggressive. It kind of in a similar vein to, Dana Dimmel kind of has a similar pedigree to Blomgren, and he's one of the guys that one of the few people in FBS football that has a fullback and those kind of ground and pound guys. He's done a lot more with kind of adjusting to his personnel and things like that, and they've gotten a lot more of an up-tempo spread kind of feel than, you know, I think he was anticipating when he got to El Paso. And so their offense, you know, has been the reason that they've been in games. I mean, last year, I think in particular, they kept a lot of games close. I think they almost beat North Texas last year, which was a more impressive feat than this year. But they've played a couple teams close, and you know, they're going to score. They might not stop anybody, but they are going to score.
It's going to be important for the Rice offense to be on top of its game in this one, because, you know, as good as they have performed at times this season, and, you know, holding North Texas to 14 and 17 in regulation from Louisiana Tech, like, this is not one where you're going to be able to take your foot off the gas and expect that you're just going to be able to stop them because it's UTEP and they haven't beaten anybody. You know, if, you know, Rice could give up 31 points on the road to UTSA, which in general probably does not have as good of an offense as this team does, then, you know, if you're not ready to come out and play your hardest against this team, they can more than do some damage.
I'll just add real quick that UTEP scored 35 points last week. I mean, the New Mexico State defense, not nearly as good, even by a long shot, as the Rice defense, but the Rice offense, their high point came 2 weeks ago against Middle Tennessee State, where they scored 31 points. Rice hasn't scored 5 touchdowns all season. And conversely, they've only given up 5 touchdowns in a conference game once. That was on the road against UAB with the rainstorm. It was really, really weird. So I don't think we should be in a situation where Rice does give up that many to UTEP. But I mean, just by pure numbers point, like, the high point of the UTEP offense so far has been higher than Rice's, which is not an encouraging thing to say, but, you know, circumstantially, I think it translates a bit better for the Owls.
And, you know, like, Kyle Oxley has not put up great passing numbers thus far. A 121 rating is nothing to write home about. 56.2% completion percentage, 7.3 yards an attempt, 5 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. But, you know, he's got some receivers that can make some long catches. You know, he's got several that are averaging more than 14 yards a catch on 10 plus catches. So they've got several players that have caught more than 10 passes. So they're spreading the ball around a lot. And Luxley is also a pretty dangerous runner. He's got, you know, even including he's lost 169 yards on sacks, but still has a net 472 rushing yards on the season. So this cat can move.
Yeah, and looking for him, it kind of felt, I mean, similar to a poor man's Asher O'Hara, who,
you know,
the top leading rushing quarterback in the conference, and Rice held them in that offense to about half of their offensive production. Ended up, I think, North Texas averaging somewhere around 450, 460 coming into the game, and they held them to about half of their offensive output. So that makes you feel pretty good. Loxley, I think, I don't want to say if he's more dynamic on the ground than O'Hara, but they're going to do a lot to emphasize maybe his rushing ability first and not hope that he throws the ball very much.
So, you know, it's nothing that they can't stop. Nothing in terms of either players, or, you know, quality of personnel or scheme-wise that they haven't seen or seen better of all season. But, you know, they've got to play disciplined. They can't let receivers get behind them like they have at times this season, thankfully less than last season. You know, when you're playing a quarterback that can run as well as Loxley can, you've always got to be disciplined in the run game and be in your gap and whatever. You know, there are a couple of different scheme tricks and you know, philosophies that you can take with regard to stopping a running quarterback, but the number one thing you have to do is that every player has to play their responsibility. It's like, you know, they literally will run some option plays, obviously, but it's the same sort of thing as when you're stopping the option. It's that you have a responsibility and you have to play to that responsibility, because the moment you get caught chasing the ball and getting out of your gap and, you know, trying to play hero ball, basically, that's the moment when, you know, you leave a bit of open grass and the guy leaves you in the dust. So nothing extraordinary that Rice has to do this week, and nothing that they haven't done all year on defense. But if there is any worry about, and I think your quote from Brad earlier highlights that we probably don't have to worry about that with this team, but they're probably feeling better about themselves after two straight wins. Just don't let that, it sounds weird to say about a 2-9 team, but you know, don't let it go to your head. Like yes, you are better than this team. You should beat this team. That's not a situation that Rice has been in a lot this year. But the one time they were favored this season, they couldn't pull that game out on the road. So hopefully that UTSA game, more than anything, will serve as a reminder for them to they have to keep their focus and play discipline this week.
Yeah, I think it was a telling point that when I was talking with Coach Demmel during media days, and you know, he had kind of a lot of similar questions that Blomgren did, when it was like, you know, we know that you took this job with, you know, a certain amount of runway and a rebuild. How do we know that you're having a successful season? How do we measure you in year two? And he said, well, I think you should measure any coach on winning the games he's supposed to win. And I thought that was pretty frank and honest from a college football coach. And it was a pretty definitive, distinct answer. And if you want to go by Vegas odds of, you know, the experts who are supposed to know more about college football than all of us, or at least enough to build, you know, pyramids in the desert. or I guess fake pyramids knocking off older pyramids. But anyhow, you know, by that standard, I think you can say that, you know, Blomgren has now this season lost a game he should have won, but made up for it by winning two that he was not supposed to. But this is a game he was supposed to. So if you can go, you know, Rice is going to be favored in two games this year, UTSA and UTEP. If you can go split those and add two more upsets, you know, I think we were talking about on the podcast when we did the schedule recap of that was kind of the expectation. You need to win the two you're supposed to win and then maybe an upset or two. So, right, you can kind of prove that you're on track here to some degree with the win. And then, you know, for Demmel's group, I mean, he has one FBS win so far in his 2 years, and it's over Rice, which is in the same rebuild situation before. It's not like he's knocked off, you know, Louisiana Tech or UAB or somebody's playing for a conference title pending tiebreaker. So there's those pieces. And then I think another part of, I guess, the story on UTEP. So on the defensive side where they've struggled, they went ahead and they lost basically their entire secondary last year. And one of those guys was Nick Needham, I think. I don't know if he just got signed by the Panthers, or he's been in practice squads and has been around. So he's NFL caliber dude, and who played extremely well for them. And they went out and they brought in transfers and JUCO and grad guys. And they attempted to rebuild the entire secondary with people who hadn't been on campus. And, you know, that we kind of just doing simple math says that's a dangerous dice roll to do. And unless you're Rice and hitting on transfers like that, it's probably not going to work out. They have so Josh Caldwell is one of the returning guys who has been there, played a little bit last season. He has 11 pass deflections and is doing pretty well. But the rest of the guys, I mean, you got Duron Lowe, and I don't even Y-K-I-L-I? Yikli?
I
don't know how to... Keely?
Maybe that, probably.
That sounds better.
That would be my guess, but
so
yeah.
he was at USC and transferred over, and he has the team's two interceptions, but hasn't played as much or as well. So they Rice has gone younger for the most part, with the exception of Naeem, who, I mean, he was a second year transfer who is two to play. So versus, you know, UTEP went older, and for the most part, those guys are not having a great season. So they're going to be vulnerable through the air. And I think especially when you're throwing out guys like Brad Rosner and Austin Trammell. And hopefully, you know, we saw a little bit of Zane Knipe the past couple weeks on, you know, that little fly sweep. And oh my goodness, I've been telling people how fast he was, but I saw it in a game and I was just like, he gets to the edge so fast. Like it's not no offense to Conference USA, but it's not Conference USA speed.
yeah.
So hopefully we see him run some routes and maybe a deep shot. I could handle a 70-yard touchdown to Zane Knight.
That'd be nice. And
if it happens, I want credit.
You combine that with they don't really have a whole lot of pass rush. They have, I think it's 11 sacks in 11 games. So there will be opportunities for Rice, both in terms of the matchups they get in the secondary and, you know, in their ability to hopefully keep Tom Stewart upright to let plays develop down the field. There will be the chance to make those shots, whether it's more of the jump balls to Rosner or whether it's, you know, it's funny that it's my instinct to call those jump balls, but I'm not sure that Rosner has actually jumped on any of them. He's just so much bigger than all the guys that are guarding him. Just
kind of, like, pushed him out of the way.
Yeah.
As they grab on him.
Yeah. But those passes to where you just let Rosner go, rebounds, let's call them rebounds. The rebounds to Rosner, or you know, the shots to, you know, maybe Zane Knipe or a guy like Jake Bailey, maybe. There will be opportunities to make those plays because of the matchup you get with this defense. So it will be fun to watch Rice close out the season, you know, get a couple big plays on offense. Because, I mean, what is Rice's longest play on the year?
What, 60, was it 61 yards that UAB run for Aston?
That sounds right.
I have to go look. I don't have the stat sheet in front of me. I'll look after. I think I want to say 61 plus or minus 2.
64.
Ah, should have given me one more wiggle.
Yeah.
But it was the UAB run, right?
It was, yeah. And other than that, you know, Ellerby had the 54 yarder against Army in the first game, and then Rosner's had a 55 yarder, but they haven't had those big game breaker plays much this season. So it'll be fun to go out in the last game of the season, get a win, and, you know, maybe put up a couple bombs and, you know, score 35, 38 points thereabouts. That'd be fun.
I mean, in any of the above, and we're talking about a UTEP defense that, you know, has a tendency to give those up. I mean, they are dead last in the conference when it comes to plays of 40 yards or more. They've given up 18 so far this year in 11 games. So simple math says Rice should get one and a half of, if just standard UTEP defense, if we pull those together. And then we kind of hit on the lack of a pass rush in the pass defense. This is a defense that's allowing 5.4 yards per carry on the ground, which is dead last in Conference USA. So you pull all those things together, Rice is going to be able to throw on UTEP, Rice is going to be able to run on UTEP, and the Rice defense has been suffocating teams and shutting out, and so far holding some of the most prolific offenses and quarterbacks in Conference USA to about half of their production. All of the numbers say this should be a game that Rice scores a lot and doesn't allow a lot of points. And when you do that, you should win.
Yep. And they don't even, you know, we'd love to see them put up the big plays they haven't and score some more points, but all they have to do is do exactly what they've done all year, play to that level. And that in this one should be more than good enough for a win. And if they play a little above that level, then, you know, they got a little confidence coming off these wins and, you know, really come out and want to put a stamp on the season, then they should have an opportunity to win this one quite comfortably, which would be really fun to see. But I think that's all I've got for UTEP. Any last words on the Miners?
I think we put it all there. I mean, the last time we had this conversation on a preview show, it didn't go so well. I also think that, yeah, I say that, but I also think that this is a really different team than came out. I mean, I know that's a cliche thing to say. But I think the bye week and that conversation with Rex Ryan and the leadership on this team, there's a different tone in the locker room. I'm not going to say they're more focused when they were, but there was kind of a backs up against the wall, do or die, fight or flight. And I really think these guys are at the fight point. So I'm optimistic that not only are we going to see them play one of their better games of the year, but they're going to put all those pieces together and score a point, at least one, in the second half.
Yeah. It's been fun watching them develop that confidence over the last couple of games, and I'm really excited to see them kind of carry it through into this last game and set themselves up for the 2020 season on a high note. But that's it for this week. We will see y'all next week to review the UTEP game, and I guess give you a little post-mortem on the season as a whole. But we'll see y'all then, and Rice Bite.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.